compare them with your own experience and ask yourself whether there might be anything to it. If there is anything to my contention, that two major factors are in large part, though by no means exclusively, responsible. Because I think that there is something that we can do about these two factors. One of them is ethical, and the other is economic. I suppose you expect me to say that. The first one is what I would call the erosion of standards in our Western society, or maybe more accurately, the subversion in the last 15 years of all external authority. And the second thing is the economic organization of higher education, or maybe better I should say the lack of any economic organization in higher education. Let me try to tell you what I mean by this first thing. I'm deeply convinced that the most important ethical phenomenon in the 1960s was the rejection of standards. Now, by a standard, I mean something to which men agree to appeal when they disagree so that they can resolve their disagreement. That's what I mean by a standard. In other words, if you say, my standard is my conscience, that doesn't fit my definition of standard. A standard is something that can be used by two or more people who are in disagreement. It is something to which they can appeal. A person, an institution, a process, a traditional authority, or anything. What I'm suggesting is that if you think back over what has happened in the last 15 years, you should be impressed by the fact that our society has radically and systematically rejected all external authority. What were some of the standards to which people appealed 15, 20 years ago? Things like the Ten Commandments. Many of you are too young to remember when if someone could cite a commandment, that sort of settled the issue. But today, we are, and I'm not talking about young people. Let me insist. This is happening also among older people. Today, the commandments seem to beg the question, you know, what is stealing? What constitutes murder? People aren't sure that just because the Ten Commandments say, thou shalt not, therefore thou shalt not, or other traditional norms of conduct. Think back to the whole area of sexual activity. Some people have said the new morality is just the old immorality. That's not really quite true. I really suspect that what people are doing today in the area of sexual behavior isn't terribly different from what they were doing 15 years ago. But the big difference is that they're doing it openly today. They're saying it's all right. No one has a right to condemn it. Just look at the so-called emancipation of the homosexual. 15 years ago, homosexuals flunk around. Today they're organized. They write letters to newspapers and magazines. They refuse to conceal the fact that they do not confine themselves to heterosexual activities within marriage. The standards that have governed this area of behavior have simply been rejected. The church used to function as a standard, but I don't think it does any longer. Even the Roman Catholic Church, Vatican II, sort of opened the door, and today the Pope really has very little authority. He does not function as a standard, as I suggested last night. By the time the Pope gets around to approving the pill, it won't matter at all anymore. Roman Catholics don't particularly care whether he approves it or disapproves it. He ain't no authority. The law, and legislatures, or the acts of legislatures. 15 or 20 years ago, if a person wanted to disobey the law, he bore an enormous burden of proof because the law was the standard. You obeyed the law because it was a law, but today it's pretty much taken for granted that you obey only just laws, and that means that each individual has to decide for himself which laws are just. The wisdom of the elders, which in many societies and also in ours functioned as a standard, does not any longer today. Don't trust anybody over 30. And it isn't just the people under 30 who are saying that. A lot of people over 30 are saying it too. The wisdom of the elders, the wisdom of the parents and grandparents, is regarded today more as accumulated hang-up than any kind of real wisdom. Even science, and science is supposed to have the truth, And that means we can appeal to scientific procedures to find out what is the case when men are in disagreement. But in the area of the social sciences, it is widely believed by social scientists that economics, sociology, social psychology are nothing more than systematic prejudice. That the social sciences can resolve trivial questions, but when it comes to the really big questions, it all depends upon value judgments or ideology. I think this became a little apparent in our discussion this afternoon. I don't know, Dave, Doug, whether you would agree. I think that what you guys were suggesting was that in talking about the state of the economy this afternoon, I was operating out of a set of value judgments that, well, really guaranteed that I would come out to certain conclusions, but if you're sticking in other value judgments, you come to different conclusions. So really, economics, or economics as I practice it, is no kind of authority. Everybody's got to make these decisions themselves. Same thing, I won't get into this, but the same thing is even happening in physical sciences under the impact of a revolution in thought that's been occasioned by a Princeton philosopher of science. Well, what we've lived through, and it's important, I think, that we remember this, that we have enough of a sense of history to go back at least 15 years and recall how different it was. But we have gone through a pervasive cultural shift that's best summarized, I think, by our use of such phrases as, well, who's to say? Or, well, it's all relative. Or, it's a matter of personal opinion. I notice my students continually, even when they are voicing their most profound convictions, they say, well, this is just my opinion. And finally, the notion is around. It's deeply ingrained in us, in our whole society, that every important issue finally is a matter of personal opinion. That's what I mean by the erosion of standards. And now, if this is going on throughout the society, we must not be surprised to find that on campuses, where authority has always been most severely questioned, among young people who have always been most skeptical of any kind of authority, that there is a total questioning of authority. The president of the university is a think. He's no kind of authority. The professors are time servers. They're no kinds of authority. In fact, none of the rules and regulations really need to be obeyed because they were devised by people who lack authority and who have no right to tell us what to do. There are no criteria today in our society to which people in disagreement are mutually willing to appeal to resolve their disagreements. And when that happens, violence serves the function of standards. There's no alternative. If men cannot find standards to which to appeal to resolve their disagreements, and they believe their disagreements are important, they will turn to violence. This is the essence of revolution, because this is what a revolutionary insists. A classical revolutionary, Thomas Jefferson, whom you all respect, they say that when finally, you know, we are so far apart that we can't discuss this anymore, when there's just nothing that King George and we have in common, what we've got to do is appeal to something that King George doesn't accept. We're going to take up arms and get rid of King George. Let me go quickly to the second thing. This problem is severely aggravated by the economics of higher education. Essentially, our colleges today and universities have owners who do not control them, producers who are not required to sell, and consumers who are not buying. And the predictable result is inefficiency, and it's verging on chaos. Let me summarize it in a very simple way. Our colleges today are controlled by faculty political organizations, national, local, disciplinary, which deceive and defraud the donors and taxpayers on the one hand, whom I call the owners, and the students and their parents on the other, whom I call the customers. I am a faculty member. I have said this to my faculty colleagues. I've said it in print. I really believe it. I'm convinced it's true. It's being said by other people. That the colleges and universities of this country, all of the better ones, and almost all of the not-so-hot ones, and a few exceptions, maybe places like Bob Jones University, are dominated by faculty political organizations. And these organizations are designed to deceive and defraud the owners and the students and their parents. These faculty organizations are essentially licensing agencies operated for the benefit of those people who grant the licenses, namely the faculty. If you touch almost anywhere on any current campus problem, I think you'll quickly see how large a part this factor plays. Take the issue of Cambodia and Kent State. Why did so many colleges go on strike? Now, there are many reasons, of course, and I am not trying to detract from the moral earnestness of the people who participated in the protests of the strikes, but I want you to notice that whatever other reasons existed, it's overwhelmingly important that a campus strike confers more benefits than costs on the strikers. The students proceed toward their coveted degrees at exactly the same pace. Nobody's going to be delayed in getting his BA because we went on strike for 2 days or a week or 2 weeks. But they get out of some classes, which are boring. They miss some tests, which they didn't want to take anyway. And they don't have to do some assignments. As for the faculty, their pay is not docked. Faculty's all for a strike, too. They don't have to work. They keep getting their pay. Why not strike? Neither faculty nor students have much interest in preventing a strike. It's a holiday. And one of the disturbing things to me about the boycott of classes or moratorium was that most of the students and faculty went out and played golf. Sure, you can say they weren't the serious ones, but they weren't going. The people who were opposed to the strike and the boycott sure liked a nice afternoon on the golf course. Or take another issue. When a group of very radical students, they march in and seize a building, a lot of the students and certainly all the townspeople will say, how do they think they can get away with it? We can't allow that to happen. That's what the not-so-silent majority usually screams. But, you know, the reason that they can get away with it is because no one effectively has an ownership interest in that building. I mean, nobody derives any particular benefit from its employment. If the students have seized the classroom building, what does the faculty think? Who cares? If I got a class in that building, I don't have to meet it. Again, the students who were supposed to meet in that room say, oh, we don't have to go to class today. It's a bum French because students at SDS have seized the building. Just think about the difference in attitude of a faculty member if students seize a classroom building against their seizing his office. Most of these liberal faculty members would not be nearly so complacent if the student seized the faculty member's office. There they would say, we'll give them 1 day to get out and we'll send in the cops. And what do you think a faculty member would say if the student seized his home? When people have no clear ownership interest in property, it becomes nobody's property. The reason that our parks are littered is the same reason. Or take the whole problem of irrelevant curricula. Why should the curriculum be relevant? Why should the curriculum be oriented to students? The students do not pay the full cost. Usually they pay less than half. So they lack the power to secure changes. A gas station doesn't treat its casual customers as badly as most professors treat most of their students. Why should the professor treat the students as well as the gas station attendant treats his customers? The station attendant does it because he knows he has to or the customer won't come back. But the faculty member is in charge. The students are there on subsidy. If they don't like it, they can lump it. They are not buying. And, you know, and when the consumer isn't buying, the producer doesn't have to sell. Now, I am convinced that if higher education is to be salvaged, and I'm not always sure it's worth salvaging in its present form, we shall eventually be forced to stop our habit of giving governmental and philanthropic subsidies to colleges and universities. I think we should cut them off and instead give subsidies to students. In other words, if the state of California wants to spend, I don't know how much they spend, but let's say they want to spend $50 million giving certain students in the state of California a college education. Let them divide that money up among the students and give it to them in the form of vouchers, which can be redeemed at the college of their choice. This means that colleges are going to have to compete for students, that a college which does not orient itself toward its customers will not survive. At the same time, we're going to have to place control of those institutions firmly in the hands of managers who must answer to the owners for the profitability of the enterprise. If the owners control and the consumers purchase, the faculty will have to produce. The basic trouble with our colleges today is that the faculty are not producing much of anything of merit. Education in this country, especially higher education, exists primarily to serve the pay, power, prestige, and leisure of educators. And students have noticed this. In other words, it's a crock. The whole thing is really a crock. And I would expect it to be. When the owners don't control it, and the consumers don't purchase the product, and the producers don't have to sell, the producers are going to have a lot. And they're having a lot. I get a juicy salary for doing... Well, I think I work fairly hard, but I don't have to. And I don't know, maybe I don't. There are lots of things I know that I don't do because I'm too lazy. And there's nobody who can make me do it. The administration tries to make me do it, I scream back at them.